Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Gals of Geekdom podcast. My name is Crystal Williams, your lovely host, and I'm here as always with the lovely Lizzie. And say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
And today we have a very special guest. We have the lovely Ree Spawn. Hi, Ree.
Hi, thanks for having me.
If you don't know Ree, she is a streamer slash host slash all around awesome person. My girlfriend.
She got here entirely on her own merits. There was absolutely no...
completely. There was no rigging of the guest list or anything.
That's right. None whatsoever.
There was no group text of me going, "Hey, do you guys mind if I have my girlfriend on?"
None at all.
That
None
never at all. Happened.
There was not a group text where she asked that, and Lizzie was like, "Sure," and I was like, "Meh."
Listen, the process to be a guest on this show is really rigorous and hard.
Now, I know that's not true. I wouldn't be here.
You calling me easy?
No, not at all. I'm saying that I'm low tier. This episode's going to be great. Tune in, guys. I've got heaps to say, and it's all hilarious, and I definitely don't swear too much, so...
It would be really bad if you really swear. If, you know, it'd be really terrible if you sweared. I mean, like, fuck. It'd be horrible.
Shut your fucking mouth.
Everyone, look, all you bitches, why don't you just shut the fuck up with your stupid fucking swears? God fucking damn it!
Jesus, motherfuckers, be quiet.
So this is getting the fucking explicit tag. Jesus.
This is what happens when you... Well, weren't you already prepared to have the explicit tag on when you brought me on to co-host? You had to have seen my tweets before you offered me this position. You had to
have known. Have you seen my tweets?
True.
You're all sleeping on my Twitter account. Like, it's not 48% swear words per tweet.
What is, like, hold on, I need to look, what's the swear, what's the swear count on my most recent
69%.
I actually haven't sworn that much on my recent tweets. I need to get my shit together.
Just say fuckity fuck fuck fuck.
Let's see, here, we have help him the fuck out, I fucking love y'all.
those are rookie numbers, so you gotta pump those numbers up.
That's right.
I said something is bullshit.
Oh my gosh, I'm like all retweets lately. Where's my original content?
It does not exist.
Is this what we call the safe queer space? Just us cursing at each other?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
The definition of safe space.
Yes.
All right, so I need to poll the group. Is Twitter the most cesspit of all the social media apps, or... Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you seen fucking Facebook?
Facebook's pretty bad.
But Facebook is infested so much with the boomers, and only...
It's the boomer conservatives.
So, yeah. like Facebook's a cesspool for... boomers, Twitter's a cesspool for dumb kids who don't know any better.
Nice.
Well,
and for the fucking normal, right?
Yeah. Like I said, dumb kids who don't know any better.
TikTok is trying to, really, really going to try and take Twitter's crown, though.
Mm.
With it, like...
I'm not on it yet, because it's funny, I'm like, it's Chinese spyware, and I don't need that in my life, and then I'll happily use my Chinese-built smartphone.
That's funny, because when people say, my brother says that to me all the time, and I'm just like, yeah, as opposed to everything else in our house,
right.
And everything
Literally
else.
Everything. Yeah.
Sounds very similar to the discourse we're fucking having with the vaccine, and not to wanting to take it. Like, they're going to put chips in us. It's like, well, you have a chip in your pocket.
Yeah. Every day. I heard that statistic here yesterday. So 30% of Australians will not be getting the COVID vaccine because they are worried about blood clots.
But your case, at least last I heard, cases have been not as bad in Australia the last year, right? Because just...
Oh, we've been fine, yeah. I think it's just because we're...
It went so much better over there and you're an island and...
Yeah, I think it's literally just we're an island. Like, our leadership's pretty piss poor, but we just have really good location.
Location, location, location.
That's right. If the zombie apocalypse happens, just go to an island. She'll be right.
I bought concert tickets this week for the first time in a year, and I'm ready to cry.
I think I know what show you're going to.
Oh, can you guess? Is it really easy to guess, Crystal?
I mean, it's hard to tell you're a fan. Super hard.
I mentioned this before we recorded, but I actually did go to a movie theater for the first time in a year, and that was surreal, and it was to see Spiral, the Saw spinoff, and it was a surreal experience going to the theater, for the first time in a long time.
Did you still have to wear masks in the theater?
Yeah, unless you were eating or drinking, you had to wear your mask in the theater, and, the way it was set up was, you'd have a set of two seats that were open, another set that was, you couldn't sit there, and it would repeat, two next to each other, two dead might be the wrong word, but...
That's good they've got social distancing in there, yeah, that's good.
I actually prefer it, because I hate crowded theaters so much, so it's, I highly doubt it was gonna get crowded for a Saw spinoff, but...
That's awesome. And was it worth seeing?
It was one of the dumbest fucking movies I've ever watched in my life, but it was so much fun that I didn't... I won't go into spoilery thoughts, just because I know you... There's at least two other people in this call that still haven't seen it and want to.
I'm excited.
But to give my general thoughts, it was... it kind of feels like something made by people who understood that the only people who are bothering to see a Saw movie at this point are just in it for how ridiculous it's going to get.
Yeah, sign me up.
And it kind of just indulges in that ridiculousness. And I think it's worth it for Chris Rock's performance, surprisingly, because he is so over the top in this movie, and it's hilarious.
That was my major question. And going to the movie is how Chris Rock was.
He is at an 11 the entire movie, and he never comes back down, and he's never subtle throughout the whole movie, and it's so fucking great.
I'm so down for this.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say I'm so down for this trend of comedians getting second wave careers with horror films. I'm just yes, man.
Yeah, sign me up. It's great.
It's so weird seeing Chris Rock play the role of the grizzled detective who's kind of I'm too old for this shit. I've been at this for so long. I've gone through so much shit in this career. When normally I see Chris Rock as he usually plays, maybe it's because the only other movie I've seen him as a detective in was Osmosis Jones, of all things. But I'm so used to his voice being associated with young, go up, flying off the handle, doesn't play by no rules cop.
I was gonna mention, did you happen to see the latest season of Fargo?
I have not. I have not seen Fargo.
Okay, you should, because it's actually great, and each season is a different story, but the most recent one was actually Chris Rock was the lead in it.
Okay.
And he plays the gangster, back in the 50s. Sort of style.
That's way more fun.
it's he gives a phenomenal performance. I know you're saying Spiral, he's not subtle. He's subtle in this. I was genuinely surprised by how well he can do under a dramatic direction and a good filmmaker, obviously, leading that. But he's great. He's one of my favorite characters on that whole season. It's just I never expected Chris Rock to be really cool and really you care about him and you kind of you understand that he does bad things and he's kind of a bad guy, but he's also kind of the protagonist in some ways. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, they handle it really well.
That's so cool.
Fargo's been on my watch list for a long time. Oh, sorry.
Oh no, I was gonna say the exact same thing. I haven't seen any of it, but it looks so good. But I was gonna ask too.
So good. It's so good.
How many seasons are there?
Four, and each season's only about 10 episodes, but I love that each season is a different story, so it still kind of all has that same Fargo-ish theme, like theming. It still does like what the movie did where it tells you that this is based on a true story, but it's really not fucking based on a true story. Every episode starts with this is a true story, but it's 100% not. And yeah. Each season has like a like star talent like across the board in terms of Ewan McGregor playing a twin brothers under different prosthetic makeup like in the last season. And then they have like the first season had what's his name? It had Martin Freeman as the lead.
Yeah, nice.
So, I mean, take it what you will, but I do recommend Fargo if you want like a weird satirical dark comedy drama.
Cool. Have you guys seen Resident Alien? That's what I was going to ask.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
I'm like halfway through it now and it's so good.
I swear I need to catch up. I think I mentioned this last podcast, but my girlfriend's been showing me Star Trek: The Next Generation, so that should give you an idea on how behind I am on TV. So.
That's such a good time, though. Are you enjoying it?
I am. It's half of it is some of the most unintelligible techno babble I've heard in my life, but like the other half is like this genuinely great character drama. The last episode I watched was called I, Borg, and it was basically they get a Borg, which for anyone listening who somehow doesn't know, they're basically these cybernetic race in Star Trek that are assimilated from multiple different creatures. And basically, if you're assimilated, you lose your free will and all that. They're basically zombies. The episode we just watched, I, Borg, is they managed to get one aboard their ship, and they're thinking, oh, we could put a virus on this one, send it back, and boom, no more Borg. But then it starts developing a free will, and they name it, and it's like, oh, shit, we gave it a name, and now we formed a connection with it. We can't use him for genocide.
God damn it.
That sounds like every time, you know, you run into a stray cat that just comes to your house, you know, right. And then you're just like, I named it, damn it, now I own it.
Right, like, as soon as they named it, I knew where it was going, because it was like, fuck, they're going to form a connection with this thing, and they're not going to know what the fuck to do, because they're not going to want to use him to basically kill the rest of the Borg, despite the threat they present.
Oh, man, so I've been playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition lately.
Yes!
Yeah, it's so good. I haven't replayed the series in so long, so I'm, like, just really enjoying it. Plus, I don't think I've played all the DLC, so it's, like, some of it is fresh for me.
Here's a fun thing. Mass Effect Legendary Edition is my first time experiencing the series, so...
Oh, nice! Where are you up to in it?
I'm currently on the totally not controversial Mass Effect 3.
Oh, nice. See, I'm only, like, midway through Mass Effect 1, but I just love how, like, they reckon that 160 years from now, I was talking about this with the mods in the chat earlier, that all racism between humanity has just dissipated, and instead they're just racist towards aliens.
That's my favorite thing in all, and so much speculative fiction, where it's like, no, the humans will stop being racist to each other because we found a new species to be racist to.
Yeah,
as if that's ever been how anything has ever worked.
I mean, it is, like, cool thinking, like, Star Trek future and humanity's, like, gotten to a point where we're not complete shitheads, but it's just so completely, yeah, exactly what you said.
Star Trek was further along enough in the future that maybe you could buy it. I know, 100 years from now is nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like... I don't know, it's just funny to me because there's just, in Mass Effect, each alien species seems to be racist towards each other, like, like, a lot of the drama involving the Krogan, it's like, you know, fuck, I hate everyone involved with the genophage.
Yeah, and, like, one of the mods I was talking to is indigenous to Canada, and they were talking about how they think it's, like, I guess there's, like, a whole lot of metaphors you could say are in those games around colonialism and, like, the Iraq War and all that stuff, too. They reckon it's, like, kind of tied in there. But, yeah, talking about the genophage and the Krogans and stuff and how they're making them infertile and how that's a similar thing that happened with Native Canadians and, oh, man. It's just like, once you start dissecting, it makes me really miss old good BioWare. Like, it's kind of a bittersweet feeling, because I'm like, wow, these games were like peak story writing, some of the best story that's ever come out in video games, and then you play Andromeda or something like that, and you're like, oh.
It's funny, because I have a lot of friends who are so hyped that I'm finally getting into Mass Effect, but also, like, half of those friends are curious of what would happen if I played Andromeda, and I'm just sitting here going, do you guys not want me to be your friend anymore?
That's right. It's not worth it.
It's like, I don't like playing bad games, because I just get frustrated.
That's right. And, like, I finished that fucker, too. I was, like, so determined. I'm like, maybe it gets better. Hours and hours and hours into it. Oh, I just don't. It's amazing the decline that happens with when you lose good stuff and you start getting too big for your boots. And we see it all the time with game developers, right? Like,
right.
Trying to think of other examples. I'm worried about the next Elder Scrolls game.
Yeah, same.
When's that supposed to come out?
I don't know. Bethesda never is clear on anything.
That's true. Good point.
Maybe you should just drop by in their DMs and ask them.
Just roll in.
But no, it's been interesting experiencing this series that I've heard about for years and, like, kind of finally going through it for the first time. Yeah. And it's like, and it's not my first time I played them. I did try playing the original Mass Effect years ago, but dropped it. This one, I actually got through it mainly thanks to the improvements. Thank God.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of it? Like, what do you think of the second one in particular?
I'll say this. First one I thought was good, had some problems. I had to replay the bit on Vermeier many times to save a particular character because I was not going to let them die, and I was mad about this entire situation. I was not going to let the game beat me.
Yes.
Second one is now one of my favorite games of all time. I fucking adored every minute I was playing it. Mm-hmm. And when it was over, I was pissed because the game was done.
Yep, that's the best one. It's so good. It's real good.
So far, 3 is really good. I think mechanics-wise, it's probably the best, but I don't like how the weight system for your weapons work. I'm looking at this, and I'm like, this is the dumbest shit! It's like...
Yeah, the changes between them in, like... They're really vastly different in terms of, in my opinion, like combat and, weapon management, inventory management, all that stuff. It's really fascinating how they make those choices. Like, I don't know if you guys have played or watched any of Village, Resident Evil.
I've played a bit of it.
What do you think of it? Because, like, it's interesting the mishmash of the previous games.
I like it so far. I'm just not heavily motivated to finish it right away, so.
Yeah, that's fair.
I will buy it at some point. Nice. I just don't have money.
Yeah, I get that. I totally get it. I watched a whole playthrough. It's so fun, but it's so dumb, which is what I love about Resident Evil anyway.
Good.
I love
right.
the same as Saw. Like, yeah, you want it to go like off the rails and be a bit ridiculous, but I'll be interested to see what you will think when you see the ending. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's divisive.
Like, in the ending of Village or the ending of Mass Effect?
Well, both.
I was going to say, I already know the ending. Like, I may not have played Mass Effect 3 back when it came out, but I was there for the ending discourse and everything that came after it.
Ooh, so. Yeah.
Like, I couldn't avoid it just because I was a teenager on YouTube, watching shit on YouTube all the time, so it was kind of inevitable.
It was huge. Like, yeah, people really lost their shit to the point where they changed the entire... game.
Right, and I'm definitely interested in checking it out because the ending's a bit more divisive from what I can tell, so.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, whenever I hear the word divisive, I'm like, I want to check this shit out, I want to see what I think.
Yeah, same. That just makes me want to jump in more.
Too, like, I feel like I'm such on, like, the opposite side of what people's perspective are with certain things, like, especially in the gaming community, my god, like,
I do not video game, for the record. This is why I have not spoken about anything you guys are talking about.
I'm so sorry.
Lizzie, I will...
Stop talking, I just don't.
Lizzie, all you need to know about Mass Effect is it's a game where you fight in space wars and fuck aliens. That is the game.
And you also get to be a sexy commander.
Femship. Femship for the
best. Femship is the best.
Absolutely. Look, as soon as I heard Femme Shep was voiced by Jennifer Hale, I was just like, yeah, I'm going with it.
Yeah, so much better. Crystal, what's your favorite game?
My favorite game? I'm going to go with a different one, Uncharted 2.
Ooh, that's
a really good one.
I love Uncharted 2. I feel like that game is like Naughty Dog perfection in terms of like mixture of simplicity with like really good storytelling and really good character development. Like those games aren't the most, I would say, like complicated. They don't have like the biggest like systems. You don't like, it's not the longest, but it's just a super polished game with incredible performances across the board and writing for those characters. My God, it makes you love them. Made me want to, like, it gave me the same feeling of like seeing Indiana Jones something in theaters. You know, it's just like an adventure story with like really likable characters that you can just get behind. You know, I love the I love the whole Uncharted series. I think Ryu had asked me what my favorite games are, and like the entire list was all Naughty Dog.
So, I get it. Like Last of Us 2, it just for like 3 months after, it was just all I thought about all the time.
Last of Us 2, I think, is one of the most brilliant games ever made, hands down.
I'm a bit mixed on Last of Us 2, but I will say the hate that it got was so overblown it made I rolled my eyes. Like,
yeah, and we all know why. Like, it's always been the same shit. Like comics, video games, movies, gate movement.
I just find it funny that like you had all these this dude bro crowd going on about like how the character of what's the character's name?
Abby.
How Abby is like, oh, she's too muscular. It's physically impossible for a woman to be that muscular. When they literally had it, like, literally mo-capped a woman. literally did motion capture for an actress who had that level of muscle.
Yeah, they just live in their own reality. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's just, it's funny because it's like, I don't think Last of Us 2 is above criticism. I had a lot of problems with it. I had a lot of praises, too. It was a game I was constantly fluctuating in my opinion as I was playing it. It was kind of a surreal yet fun experience as a result.
For sure. Like, I totally get, I get the criticisms around the narrative structure and, like, why people were frustrated by the pacing. But, story-wise, I can't think of anything else that impacted me so much.
To agree. I feel like it was so impactful. Like it was kind of, I knew when it happened in the game, when the switch happened, and I don't want to spoil things, but I knew that people were either going to love or hate this, and I loved it. It just takes what you expect and just kind of flips it on its head, and it gives you something way more nuanced, in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry, Lizzie, we should talk about something that, like, where you can interject.
It's fine. It's cool to listen.
I was just going to say, before we drop the subject of games, since we're saying our favorites, my favorite is Yakuza 0, so.
Oh, nice. I've heard really good things about Yakuza, but I've never played any of them.
It's probably my favorite franchise of all time, just because it's a game, like, they've gone with a philosophy of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like all the games, barring the seventh one, because that took a genre shift, like kind of went, didn't really change too much with the core gameplay, just tweaked what was already there. And as a result, the games are consistently fun. And I would say 4 is probably the worst, but that's because of structure reasons. But other than that, I'd say it's a consistently fun experience. And even 7, while it did a genre change, was very fun, especially as a role-playing game of all things.
Nice. I mean, they look amazing. I've nearly bought them so many times. It's just I get a bit intimidated because I know I'll want to play the whole lot, and there's so many of them.
Yeah, you're going to be in the... If you're playing the whole series, you're in it for the long haul. Like, I did an entire binge of everything from Yakuza 0 to Yakuza 6 to get ready for... the seventh one when it was coming out, and that was a trip.
Yeah, how long did that take you?
A while. I mean, it would have taken longer if I went for all the side quests, but I was focusing mainly on the main quest because I knew if I went for all the side shit, I was gonna be on Zero, especially for a long fucking time.
Yeah.
Because Zero has probably like a shit ton of side quests to do. So.
a kid, I played the we had a Wii Fit.
Hell yeah.
That's my contribution to the conversation.
Hell yeah. I love those like Reddit posts of, I don't know if you guys have seen these, but like where old people, but like people over 60 will say like grandparents have used the Wii Fit every day since it's come out, and they have these like massive streaks, like thousands and thousands. Yeah, it's so cute.
That's so normal.
That's my contribution.
Yeah. No, you're this contribution and this conversation is going exactly as planned. And what I mean is there was no fucking plan.
There's never a plan.
Nailed it.
Like the I don't know if you want to go back and listen to the last episode, and I guess it's explained in the episode, but man, we fucking left that. I left that thing untouched. Like, I normally leave it untouched. I do cut out the part where I count down. Nah, the last episode I just left it untouched because we said we would in the middle of the podcast. And I'm just like, fuck it, let's do it. And we leave in Jazzy, your blooper is totally in there.
I haven't gotten a chance to listen to it, and now I'm angry. I'm angry knowing my blooper.
the name of the episode is a giveaway for that. What was it? I said animation mistakes in politics? Question mark.
What controversial topic of the week should we talk about?
I think we should talk about how America's white supremacy problem is impacting everything what we love and enjoy, and capitalism will be the death of us all, and we need to overthrow all the states.
You can add Australia to that list too. We have the same issue with white supremacy.
This is true. This is fucking true. Yeah. Man, we have to hit those controversial topics.
The real debate is that more or less heavy than talking about Israel and Palestine?
Oh yeah.
Like we know this.
Are we gonna make this a politics show?
No. I don't know enough about any of these subjects for that. That'd be so funny though. Listen to someone who knows absolutely nothing about any of these issues.
Isn't that just what conservative talk shows are?
Yeah.
Yeah, but conservative talk shows just make their stuff look... They just make shit up.
Yeah, 100%.
They really do. That's one of the wildest things. That's another thing that's actually super wild on TikTok, though, is... there's not a lot of conservative presence on TikTok. But the weird thing about it is that people go on that app and just say shit. And everyone will just like, this is factual now. Everyone... Like, there's no fact-checking. Like, it's such a wild... Like, it feels like... A bubble where like all the Gen Z teenagers are experiencing what the internet was like 20 years ago for the first time. Like, it's so
but I don't get, like, Google is so easy to use, or like any, if you don't want to like give to corporate, like you can always use DuckDuckGo. Just use a search engine to do
but you can't 30 trust,
second search.
You can't trust Google. That's owned by the liberals.
That's what I'm saying. Like, use a DuckDuckGo search. Like, do something that's not corporate, but just do a quick search engine fact check. It takes 30 seconds.
Literally Google anything.
Yeah.
this is like one of my least favorite things, though. Something that's become, because you know how there's a culture on Twitter of just kind of like, once someone has said something too many times, suddenly it turns into like a joke Twitter script phrase.
Yeah, nice. Yep.
Yeah. Copy-pasta. Something I hate is that people have done that with source.
Oh.
People have been like, have turned it into like a joke to ask for a source for something. I'm like, no, I'm not going to believe what you say because you put it on Twitter.
Yeah. Like,
I'm allowed to, people are like, Google is free. Okay. And Google will send me to the wrong place. So if you've got a reliable source for this information I'm hearing for the first time, drop it.
Yeah, if you want to succeed in any professional academic space, you need to have evidence of what you're claiming is true.
I know that the bibliography is like the least fun part of the paper, guys, but you still need it.
Wow, I haven't made one of those in years.
Oh my god.
I feel old.
I went through basically 4 years of university with almost none of my teachers. Like, I always had to do a bibliography, always. But, like, it was just, like, it has to be there.
Yep.
And it was whatever. And then I had one teacher and I think I've talked about him on the podcast before. Professor McBride, who I loved very, very dearly, and was very old. He was so picky, but he was very precise about the way that bibliographies needed to be structured and written, and like it needs to be in alphabetical order, and it needs to be in this format. And of course, the format was different than.
Of course.
Anyone ever asked him to do. And again, I love this teacher, but like he just, you know, very old, set in his ways kind of teacher. So it was suddenly I had to like make the bibliography perfect, and I had to put all this energy into the thing that I usually would slap together last thing before I turned in a paper. And he wanted me to like bring him a rough draft of the bibliography.
And I was like, okay. Am I allowed to ask what you studied?
I'm a film major. I was a film major.
Nice. That's
but
so cool.
Not like a talent, not like a talented practical with a camera filmmaker, but like a listen to my opinions on history and theory filmmaker.
Hell yeah,
film major. Yeah, I have. Oh my gosh, I just cleaned. It's not here now because I finally cleaned my desk. Ooh. And also, the people listening to the podcast aren't going to be able to see it anyway. And
oh, totally.
My streak of referencing things around me that no one can see. But I have this book about this tall of books that are specific, all written specifically about the history and feminist film theory as it applies to women in horror, which is my favorite subject in the world.
Oh, wow.
And that's like, it's all I've read over the last couple of years is just director biographies and film theory and film history stuff, because that's my favorite subject.
See, Ree, this is you can see why I reached out to Lizzie to be a part of the show when I was restructuring.
Oh, 100%. I'm just like so fascinated already. I'm like, please talk to me more about it.
Well,
I want to hear everything.
I love talking about this stuff. But I try. Nice. I also, because that's like my favorite thing in the world to talk about is horror movies and feminist and queer shit in film. I try really hard to not make that the thing I talk about every single week on here, because it's supposed to be a versatile show. And I don't want to make it the Lizzie talks about women in horror movies for the 47th time.
Maybe we should just have a segment. A weekly segment.
Oh, that's not a bad idea, Ree.
I would listen to it. I'd love that.
Make sure I watch a new movie every single week and be like, this is what I'm going to talk about.
I feel like I need to make sure I watch something new every week just to talk about it here. Like, and I was just looking at showtimes because movie theaters are finally open again, and I'm looking at showtimes. It's like, God, there's nothing out that I'm either interested or seeing or haven't already seen. Like, unless I want to go see Mortal Kombat on the big screen, even though I already went and saw it on my TV.
Well, you know what I did see this week, because I didn't end up having time to go see Spiral, because like I said, I was watching my nephews with my sister. We did take my nephew to go see, I finally saw Raya and the Last Dragon.
Oh, was it good?
I thought it was very good. My nephew loved it. I thought the animation was very beautiful. I especially loved the conceit of dragons in it. I feel like this is the first, maybe not the first time. No, because there was Mulan, I guess. But it was just so interesting to see Disney's interpretation of more Eastern dragons and Eastern folklore and stuff, as opposed to so aggressively European as it's always been. And and obviously I'm in a mixed place with that, because on the one hand, cultural appropriation bad, but also I'm like, no, I want to see Disney's resources put towards more diverse storytelling.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it'd be so much.
Struggle is real. I get it.
No, I actually do want to see that. I do plan to, but when it becomes free on Disney Plus.
Yeah, once it does, I know my girlfriend wants to see it, so I'm probably gonna watch it with her. So
my plan was to wait too, but then my sister was like, "Do you want to come see the movie? Like, you're watching them. Do you want to go see the movie?" And I'm like, "Sure."
That's kind of why I saw the live action Mulan. It was free.
I saw it because it was free too, but I still felt ripped off.
I guess it wasn't. It was meh. That's like, I don't have any super. I generally don't come away from movies really pissed off. Most of the time, I just like, if I don't like it, I'm just like, yeah, you know.
I'm like that too. This is a thing that always also made me feel like I was bad or not really fitted to be any sort of film critic or any sort of film theorist the way I wanted to be, is because especially the culture on the internet always felt like you have to dislike thing. You have to be angry all the time. And I just have this problem with, even with films that I don't like, the first thing my brain does is try to find the things that I do like about it. I'm like overwhelmingly positive about stuff. I'm like, even like, you could take a movie that I really, really hate, and I can explain to you why I don't like it, but I will probably start out with like a 5-minute spiel about all the things I did like about it, and why I understand where it's coming from and what it's trying to do. And like, I really love to give art the benefit of the doubt and
try
and see what it's
fresh air, though. That's nice to hear that different perspective, because like, you're still passionate, you're just the other end of the spectrum where you're like celebrating more than tearing it down.
I do.
There's nothing wrong with that.
My favorite thing someone ever said to me actually is, there's a movie I really, really don't like, and I'm happy to give the spiel about it if you guys want me to, but my friend asked me, why don't you like it? And after I explained the whole thing to me, what she said to me was, that's so interesting, that made me want to watch it again, just because of the way you explained what you didn't like about it.
I've had that experience too, where I've told people about how bad a movie is, and they're like, oh shit, I gotta see it, because that sounds like hilarious or something. Like,
yeah. Not even just like I made it sound bad, she was just like, your I apparently made the movie sound a lot deeper in explaining what I didn't like about it, and I was just like, cool.
Like, I remember I was explaining to a friend of mine why I didn't like the movie Unfriended, and why wouldn't I dislike Unfriended? It was bad. And she was like, oh, this sounds right up my alley. And I'm like, oh, well, cool, I'm glad I gave you something to look forward to.
The second Unfriended is better, but man, it's a fucking depressing movie. I'll just say that.
I saw the second one. I thought it was worse, honestly.
You thought it was worse? Okay.
Worse in which, I don't know, at least the first one I got a few laughs. The second one I was just kind of annoyed, so.
I never bothered to watch the Unfriended movies, but I watched that other one that was based on Facebook. What was it, Deadly Friend?
Oh, I didn't see that one.
I think I know what you're talking about. I know a couple people, reviewers I follow, looked at it, so.
Deadly Friend was the Wes Craven movie. Wait, no. about the robot.
Before we get off that topic, if you want a good version of what Unfriended, I guess that sort of filmmaking style where it's like from the perspective of a computer or whatever, I recommend Searching.
Yes.
I heard that one's good. I've heard that
it's
one's good.
It's very
Searching
good.
Searching was great. Searching, like, got me.
Reed, did you see or hear of Searching?
I haven't, and I haven't seen the Unfriended films either, so I'll have to do some watching.
Searching is not a horror movie, it's a mystery thriller.
Okay, cool.
And John Cho. Sorry.
Oh, nice.
I was going to say, I do like retelling my experience watching the Unfriended movies, just because they're, like, there's so much about these movies that infuriate me on just a basic filmmaking level that it's actually kind of a fun experience to describe. It's so weird. I hate those movies, but anytime someone asks, oh, how was your experience watching that? I'm like, oh, let me tell you.
You make a good point, though, because, like, there is a place for, especially in horror, like, badly produced or put together or written movies, because otherwise how do you have the dichotomy of like what's good?
Well, yeah, a lot of horror is bad, like it's just for the genre by design.
What makes the horror genre, because it's obviously my favorite genre of film, and a big part of what makes it my favorite is that, and less so nowadays, I found in the last 20 years, is you can kind of make it on anything, but horror is a movie that's like you make it. It's a genre that's, the easiest to make on basically any budget.
Mm-hmm.
But there's such a history in the horror genre of films just being, like, these so scrappy, and they're so do-it-yourself. And to me, that exemplifies so much of what I love about the art of film and filmmaking.
Oh, same here.
Part of what I love about why I love the 70s horror so much is that, like, it was this period of time where... So I'll talk about this a lot, but the 70s, at least in American films, to specify, people are going to come at me about Europe and Asia, that's other regions, different laws, but in American film, in the 70s, it was this period of time after the Hays Code stopped being implemented, and before the rise of, like, home media being a really, really big thing in the 80s. So the 70s was this period of time that was kind of a wild west for filmmaking. But it was also when it, like, regular film equipment became so much more accessible to, like, regular people. And it wasn't great, but it was like you could go to a store and you could buy a camera and you could make a movie. So
really experimental.
Yeah, it was this really great experimental time for you just threw shit at the wall and saw what stuck. And it's just so amazing because you see much of that in horror.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crossover with, I was just going to mention, Ray. In Australia, y'all had your own sort of exploitation/experimentation era during that time just as much.
Yeah. I've actually seen, like, I probably wouldn't have seen anywhere near as much as Lizzie, but, like, I've seen a few from the 70s that are, like, Australian made, and I really get what you're saying in terms of, like, creativity driven by you have no money, so you have to, like, just figure something out. And, like, it's amazing what people come up with and how much of that is still carried on in today's horror films, like, techniques that are still used and... because, like, I don't know, when did they start doing things like dolly zooms and, you know, like, all this cool stuff that was, like, really low budget but really effective on screen? Because so that's just continued.
You can trace the earliest dolly zoom back to, like, the silent era. But one of my favorite, like, plucky do-it-yourselfness of filmmaking stories ever is a story from Sam Raimi when they were filming the first Evil Dead. He talks about how, so we got this one shot by putting the camera in the boat and just pushing the boat out across the lake.
That's amazing.
And someone asked him, how'd you do that without breaking the camera? And his answer was just like, what do you mean without breaking the camera? The camera broke. But we got the shot because there wasn't another way. We didn't have the money to do anything else. So they had. And that, I love that. I love that story and that quote so much. I'm just like, you know, we broke. We had to break our camera. That was the only way we got the shot we needed.
It's always.
So I know...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, Crystal, like, I know, Crystal, you're like, you love Evil Dead. But like, part of why I love it so much is all those behind the scenes stories of like, what a nightmare it was for all of them to make and how long they spent and how injured they all got because they had exactly what Lizzie was saying, like no money. But it ended up being like one of the most revered horror films of all time. Sorry, Jazzy. Go ahead.
I was going to say, on the topic of Sam Raimi, it's interesting when you see a director go from a genre with that typically has low budgets like horror to go into high budget filmmaking like with superhero movies because it seems like superhero movies tend to get horror directors on board more often than
there's a really prominent example of this even before a superhero genre. I got to think about Peter Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
This dude who made small little films in the 80s, especially like ones that were excessively gory and excessively
bad
over
taste.
The top.
Yeah.
Bad taste. I guess. It's called Dead Alive here, but I think it's called Brain Dead.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know why they changed the name. It's really fucking weird.
It is weird.
And then there's like Meet the Feebles, which is R-rated.
Meet the Feebles. I love Meet the Feebles.
Have you heard of that?
I have not.
It's basically it's like if you take the Muppets and but just make it extremely R-rated, like excessively over the top. And have characters dealing with PTSD and drug abuse and sex and everything.
Hell yeah.
Fantastic.
Am I the only one that also just, like, really loves puppets?
Like, I love
puppets. I love practical effects, and puppets, I think, are, like, tied into that.
Absolutely.
Have you seen Puppet Master?
I don't think I have.
I have not.
Okay. Puppet Master is not, like, the peak of horror franchises. It's a bottom of the barrel franchise, but it's so fun to watch for the puppetry in those movies.
Cool.
They're definitely high tier, low brow
high
art.
Tier, low
you know
tier.
What I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I love that. Because like even you could consider like a lot of the practical effects in the latest Evil Dead TV series. There was a lot of like actual puppetry in that. You know, like when he's got the corpse on his head. Ashy slashy. Man, it's so good. Like, how creative is that when people can just, like, make these realistic looking corpses and, like, monsters and unbelievable.
I can't get the thought of the morgue scene out of my head. Sorry.
That's exactly what I was picturing.
Yes, you're not familiar with this either.
I do watch horror movies, but not a lot of horror movies.
Yeah, Ash vs. Evil Dead. I don't want to explain the scene.
I was going to say, the only Evil Dead movie I've ever seen was Army of Darkness. And you think I would watch the others after that, since I really fucking loved Army of Darkness. Army of Darkness
is so good. Speaking of puppetry and stop motion and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I really liked it because it was fantasy horror, so it was kind of going into a genre that was more my love love of my life.
It's unique in this franchise in itself too. It was the first one of the original trilogy to be like produced by like a big studio with Universal backing it with a budget. Yeah, and also the tone shift where it's like. I love that movie too, but my favorite in the series is Evil Dead 2, like by far. But
you
I love
the tone of that franchise, just like more.
Yeah, I mean, like my favorite, I actually think Ash vs. Evil Dead got it right 100%. It was a mixture of the jokes and the humor of Army of Darkness with the horror elements present in 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. I think that's my favorite. Sort of balance.
What I really like about Sam Raimi is that as a director is he tends to like with his good films he tends to know he knows how to strike a good balance between like drama and comedy, like not just in horror but like with his Spider-Man trilogy. I think he hit at the very least the first two. You could make an argument on he didn't get it right with 3, but with the first two at least I think he struck a decent balance.
Yeah, I only blame Sam Raimi so much for the problems with 3 though.
Right.
That's a lot on the studio.
And keep in mind, I'm one of those weirdos who likes Spider-Man 3 because it's so fucking dumb, but...
I mean, I have fun with Spider-Man 3. There are way worse movies in the world than Spider-Man 3.
There's way worse Spider-Man movies, too. It's the same.
This is true. Agreed. I would 100%... Like, if I'm doing this... Like, if I'm watching 1 and 2, I will probably watch 3.
Same.
Complete the trilogy, like...
Mm-hmm. And I will admit, like, I did get a Blu-ray set of the Spider-Man trilogy that came with a producer's cut for Spider-Man 3. And that was rather interesting to watch, not necessarily for the cut itself, but just for kind of a couple of the added scenes they had.
How are you guys feeling, actually, how should I phrase this? What do you hope to see in this new Spider-Man movie with the whole lot of them hanging out again?
Oh, I'm so excited for that. I expect it to be really good.
I've kind of had a weird history with the Holland films. I was super indifferent to Homecoming, and if you ask me to tell you why, I don't remember it. Nothing about that movie stuck out to me. But Far From Home, I actually really enjoyed. So
nice.
I'm hoping they keep up that momentum, like because what I really enjoyed about Far From Home is that it felt unconventional for a Spider-Man movie. It was still Peter Parker, but they put him. Something as a simple enough change as a change in location made Far From Home so much more interesting to me than Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really liked the villain. I like the ideas behind what they were doing with him. So, and yeah, I am interested in this new one because they're bringing in multiverse shit and thus bringing in apparently bringing in Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, which I'm very excited because I fucking adore both of them. So.
Yeah,
like,
I'm
so say what you will about the Mark Webb films. I thought Andrew was a fucking amazing Spider-Man. So.
I always felt so because the casting in the Amazing Spider-Man movies I thought was really good, and it was a shame. It was a waste of that whole cast.
I liked the first one quite a bit, actually. The second one I don't even remember. It had so little impact on me. But I am interested to see where this new film goes, though. Admittedly, when it comes to Spider-Man films, my interest is more so focused on the animated ones that Sony's doing, so.
Yeah, I'm with you. They're excellent. I would love to see Andrew die and Spider-Gwen become a thing.
Yeah.
I low-key think that this is all, that's going to come together, honestly.
Yeah.
Multiverse. Like, everything
this new phase of Marvel. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Like, that's what I'm most excited to see.
Also, Venom was one of the dumbest fucking movies ever, and I'm very excited for the new one.
Yes.
Venom's another movie that I enjoyed purely on how stupid it was.
I don't know. Venom is a complicated movie. I enjoyed it, but I don't feel like I got any of my money's worth with it. Like, I felt like it was not, like, even for, like, I didn't even think it was that, like, amazing for a so bad it's good sort of thing. I just was like...
But Crystal, Venom and Eddie is best bromance.
You know what?
I ship it.
Maybe that's not my sort of game.
Goals, you guys.
Right?
All right. We have to watch that together, then.
Sounds good. Sign me up.
All righty.
So I think this is actually the time when I think we should get to wrapping up the show. I know it's a little early, but we we have lives.
What?
And I have a cat that's currently trying to get into my shit. I'm kidding.
This is really fun. There's
a double entendre in there somewhere, Crystal.
I didn't say it. but in all seriousness, it's been a blast having our guest Rhea on our show today.
Thanks for having me and letting me hang out. That was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. I'd like to do, at the end of our show, we usually do pluggables, like what you want to plug. So do you want to tell the audience what you want to plug, where people should find you, what you do,
yes,
all that good
I'm
stuff?
Like, thank you so much. So I'm a third owner of IFLC. You can find us on all the social medias, Reddit, Discord, Twitter, Facebook, all the cesspits. You can find us there. And we have a YouTube channel, which is fucking titties, and you should check it out. And I'm re_spawn on everything if you want to talk to me specifically. I think that's basically it.
Awesome. Jazzy?
As usual, you can find me over on Lady Jazzington on Twitter. You could also find my YouTube channel, Jazzy Oliver, where I upload a variety of shit posts.
Quality shit posts.
Quality.
Indeed. quality Death Note shit posts on occasion.
Lizzie?
I am Lizzie Lemondrop. You can find me on Twitter at Lizzie Lemondrop and on TikTok. Again, as I always say, 90% of my TikTok is shitposting, but occasionally I talk about I talk about film theory and I talk about horror movies and I talk about a lot of that. I got a little bit of a running series on there right now, actually specifically talking about 2000s horror and the politics of the era and how it affected that, because despite that being my least favorite era of horror, it's one of my favorite to talk about, just because it's, I think, so blatantly on its nose, just such a reflection of its socio-political climate, and I find it very, very interesting to talk about. And then also on my Twitter account, the link in my bio has a link to my website. Please go read the things I write.
Yes.
And I am your one of your obviously hosts, Crystal Williams. You can follow me on Medium, where I write articles about politics and one about Weird Al Yankovic. And I also am on Twitter at Crystal W Rocks. You can see, if you go to our description on Twitter account for Gals of at Gals of Geekdom, you can find all our Twitter's names in the bio for that. So you should definitely come follow us, check us out. And again, we've had another blast. You know, every week is so much fun to come back here, to meet new people, to have conversations about geeky shit, and also delve into politics, but horror movies and feminism and all that beautiful, nerdy shit. So
that I will never shut up about.
No, and I never asked you to shut up about that. So thank you, Ree, for being on. You're welcome on anytime. You know,
thanks, buddies. Oh, anytime you want me back, I'm here. That was super great.
Hell yeah.
So, and that is it for another excellent episode of the Gals of Geekdom podcast. Until next time, see ya. Bye.
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 See you. Thank you.